Hey, welcome to the ThriveCast. It is a production of the Thrival Organization, and Thrival has been around going strong for almost 15 years, where firm owners come from all over the world to build community and grow and build their firms together through our programs, events, education, and conferences. And we want to say thank you to Bill. They are a sponsor of the ThriveCast and have been for many years. We're actually a 15-year user of Bill in our firm. So thank you, Bill, for helping us as we deploy Bill into a lot of our controllership and CAS work with our clients all across the country. Thank you, Bill, for being a sponsor of the ThriveCast. Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the ThriveCast. You know, we love to bring guests. I think we've been doing this for almost 12 or 13 years, and we bring guests who know how to run firms. They know how to build firms, scale firms, consult with people who are doing those kind of things. So I'm really excited to bring Salim Omar on the show. And he's been doing this for many, many, many years. And he was just telling me offline that he interviewed me for his show 10 years ago, I think. So I'm really excited to hear so many different questions I have for Salim. So Salim, thank you for coming on the show. Welcome to the ThriveCast, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I'm super excited, Jason. Yeah, it's been 10 years. Can you imagine where I interviewed you and, you know, got your wisdom, and now it's kind of turning the tables, and a lot's happened, I think, for both of us in the last 10 years. So yeah, I'm really excited about kind of what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this, you know, we're going to chat, and there's so much I can learn from you, and our guests can really learn a lot. You know, a lot of times we tell people, We were an early firm that went virtual back in 2012, and a lot of people go, "Wow, y'all were virtual before it was even cool to go virtual." But I think you were way virtual way longer than that, like almost 30 years ago. Salim, is that right?
Yeah, no, actually, we had a brick and mortar, and you may have been one of my inspirations to go virtual.
Okay, you know, thought you had done it way sooner than we did.
So. Yeah, no, it's been several years where we went virtual, and, you know, and yeah, Summit, Jody Grundon, he was one of my inspirations as well. Oh, yeah. He did it way before.
Yeah.
It became something we could do. So, you know, it's sometimes, you know, when we, you know, we have beliefs and we think something cannot be done, and we say, no, not in the accounting industry. People want to meet face to face.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and we have those beliefs that hurt us. And so, you know, when I interviewed you, I was an inspiration. So there, yeah. And then Jody, lots of conversations with him where he's like, yeah, we're virtual. And this was several years before the pandemic. So
yeah.
These are all things that like told me, yeah, go virtual, do it virtual. And it's been one of the best things you've done.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not perfect, is it? You think, wow, this is going to be glorious, but you know, you got to run in a virtual firm is different than a brick and mortar firm. You got to have completely different processes. You got to lead team culturally in completely different ways. What are some of the bumps you ran into when you went virtual? Do you remember?
Man, I've just seen more positives than many bumps. I mean, like anything, we move residents. You know, if we move our residents, there's going to be bumps. Now, we are not used to the new area and all that. But it's only within time, you know, it's a matter of time where we get acclimated, and then the new home, the new virtual home becomes the home. And it's like, it's pretty amazing what it, you know, it opens up to.
Very cool. Well, how did it affect your team? Because I remember that was a big deal for us when I went virtual. I actually didn't do any planning. I just shut the office, and then I'm like, oh, I have a server and people have to log in to do tax returns. And I didn't. There's so many stupid things I didn't think about. But did it affect your team in any way? Can you remember?
Yeah, it does. I mean, they're not now used to seeing me face to face, or, you know, the water cooler conversations, we don't have those anymore. But it kind of forces us to do things in a different way. you know, having meetings and regular touch points and all that, you know, the clarity of communication becomes even more important. So it just kind of forced us to be more intentional about all that is what it did. And as long for the team, I mean, I feel like they enjoyed the freedom as well from not having to go to an office. So they started seeing the positives. Most team members behaved themselves, you know, because, you know, you can always abuse, you know, a system with this virtual, but I think most people, they were connected to it, you know, from a purpose standpoint, a vision standpoint, that they really worked with their heart, and they continued kind of operating in that way.
Yeah. Nice. And how big is your firm, Salim?
25 team members.
Okay. Yeah. And how are they scattered? Are they scattered globally or just US
globally.
Based? Okay.
In America. Yeah. US and globally. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. What do you think? We haven't in our firm, and a lot of firms are now, it's pretty common, right, to have global team members, you know, as contractors in other parts of the country. We haven't done that yet, but. And a lot of people have, you know, they're practicing with it. Some love it and some don't love it. And you can't say you don't love it on a show because Salim, your team will hear that. So how is it different having global team? Because they're going to be in a completely different time zone. Like, how do you manage stuff like that?
Yeah, so they all work on the EST. My office is, you know, on the EST time zone. So
okay.
They all work with that in mind.
Okay.
Cultural, nice. There are cultural differences. You know, people in the Philippines, people in India, there's cultural differences.
Yeah.
I was born and raised in Africa, in Kenya. I'm an Indian ancestry, but born and raised in Kenya. So.
Okay.
But just being, because I've got the Indian ancestry, I'm able to communicate with the Indian team and understand their culture.
Yeah.
And then with the Philippines, I've been working with them for, even when we were brick and mortar, we've been working with a team that's global.
I see.
With the Philippines, I started working with them like 12 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And with India, I've been working for them for like 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So okay. While we were a brick and mortar firm, we had a team that was also virtual at that time, so.
I see. So they didn't really feel a lot of differences. That is that global team.
No, and then we all went virtual. And I feel like it probably became easier because now we're all on the same page. We're all virtual.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, a lot of times when we consult with firms, we're like, hey, you need to be virtual or brick and mortar. If you're a hybrid, that's even a much more difficult culture to run because now you have these in-person ideas, thoughts, and cultures, and there other people can feel left out. And so those are things to avoid. So it makes sense. It actually got better for you when you went completely virtual.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, nice. And how long have you been running your firm?
Oh, wow. We're going to celebrate our 30th year this summer.
Ah, congratulations,
3-0.
Man.
3-0.
That is,
yeah, it's been
a
while.
That is awesome.
96 is when it started. So 2026, yeah, our 30th year. So
that is so cool. Congratulations. That's really cool. And it's,
thank
you know,
you.
Yeah, just like us, we run a firm. And then, you know, through our organization, Thrival, we got into firm consulting. And you did that too a long time ago. And Why did you do that? Why did you then lean towards CPA firm consulting? Because you've been doing that for a long time, I think.
Yeah. My company at that time was CPA Marketing Genius. And I just enjoyed, you know, interacting with CPAs, sharing what was working for me in my firm. And you know what they say is when you teach, you really learn. I enjoyed that part really well, is, you know, teach it, share it through conferences, what have you. And I became more grounded in what I was sharing. So I enjoyed that part of it. Up until COVID, I did that. I had a big conference every year and COVID, I canceled my conference in 2020. And I was like, all right, it's time to transition. I've done this for like 10, 12 years. It's time to transition from consulting. And then I started seeing, you know, practice owners, myself included, aging. And I was like, all right, I just want to kind of help people that are looking to for the next chapter, what that looks like. Because that's kind of what I'm thinking for myself.
Yeah.
You know, and what how I'm spending my day and my vision and succession planning and all that. I was like, I'd love to kind of now go there. And so, yeah, that's kind of my next my next chapter in with CPA firm owners to do that. So I wrote a book, CPA Exit Playbook, a few months ago, and started just having that, the research and putting my thoughts together on paper and then having conversations with CPA firm owners that are now looking at, you know, they're in their 50s, 60s. They're like, all right, what's next? I've been doing this for a while. What's next? So that's kind of,
That. Well, that's wild, Salim. We in Thrival, so Thrival, our consultancy for firms, has been around for 15 years this past November. And we had a conference for 14 years, and we just sunset that conference too. And we talked to our Thrival membership about, you know, just eliminating some of the member levels and really leaning into programs that are monthly accountability programs for firm owners, typically some large, you know, that are in somewhat larger firms. And it is wild, you know, mid-50s, and this is when this stuff starts to get in your head. You start to think about your future, and I wonder why is that? Like, for me, I think I'm like, okay, I've done, so I've led the firm for almost 25 years, and I haven't done it quite as long as you, but I'm starting to think about what is my best use of my time and value as I move into the latter part of my career. And do you think it's just age? That's when we start thinking about those things. I don't know if it's just age driven.
So.
You think? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. People in the 30s, 40s, I clearly wasn't even thinking. You know, we kind of all feel like we're immortal and we'll be around for hundreds of years. We kind of show up like that and we talk like that and all that. And then when you get in the 50s, I think it's some wisdom and, you know, all that. We start seeing our parents aging, and I saw that for myself, my parents passing away, and that becomes like real, wow. I always assumed they would be around, and now they're not. And that's the same that's going to happen with me, you know. And really, you try and wake up, you know, have these conversations with the children. So maybe they want to, you know, you're hoping they'll appreciate you more. So, you know, like it's, you know, it's all finite, you know, from that standpoint, our time here. So I don't know. Yeah. Well, that plays into it.
Well, I think those are. Yeah, I guess those are the things I'm thinking about, you know. And you do. You start appreciating the people you're in relationships more with, you know, at that time, parents and partners and friends and members in your team. You start to perceive them more from really a thankful perspective. And, yeah, I guess age is what brings us to that point. And, of course, parents passing away, that's a pretty hard thing to go through. I haven't gone through that yet, but that's going to be weird and tough, you know, to make me, you know, think differently. Have you had to change how much you work? Like, you just can't work as much, or do you tend towards working a lot, or how does it affect your work commitments?
Yeah. I mean, the type of work I do is more passion projects. It's not accounting, taxes. I've been away from that for 10 plus years.
Okay,
you know, on the technical side, I don't do any of it.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm the best at it. There are smarter people than me on the technical side, so I try not to go there. And to my advantage, I feel like I can focus on working on the business, which is what I think a CEO needs to be doing.
Okay. What is the, so I do want to ask you some questions about your book, the CPA Firm Exit Playbook. But what is the focus of your work now? Is it on CEOs running firms? Is that really most of what you focus on now?
Yeah. And it has been just kind of discussing or helping them in what area of their practice. If they're looking for operational improvements, you know, if they're in their 30s, 40s, probably a good number of your members are, that they're looking for operational profitability, workflows and all that. And then there's growth. So there was a stronger emphasis where I would help firm owners. And now it's like, let's look at the next 3 years, 5 years. Let's look at operations and growth from that standpoint of the next 3 to 5 years. So it's just kind of changing the timeline. They don't have 15, 20, 30 years to build, you know, something.
Well, my the book I just released is Scale with Purpose, and it is about firm scaling. But yours is about CPA firms exiting. So mine's trying to help people grow and expand, and the things I've learned through the process of running our own firm. Is there a reason you leaned into specifically firms that are exiting? Would that just be around your age and how you feel about that? Is that why you lean towards that?
Yeah, I mean, I turned 60 this year. And so naturally, it was natural for me to kind of go there. I'm in that group there. And I feel from what I see is, you know, we live, a human being lives for a long time. And having a firm is our identity. And I think that a lot of people think that they have to sell and then sail away in the sunset and enjoy retirement. And I feel like that's not necessarily, there are other options, and continuing to work in the firm is an option. So I did two acquisitions over the last couple of years. One was an acquisition where they merged, the firm merged into my firm. The partner, the owner, continues to work in my firm. And then I acquired another firm where the owner, the seller, wanted to focus in on financial planning. And so he's like, man, if I didn't have to do any accounting and taxes, I would be such a happy man. I love retirement financial planning and all that. So kind of we acquired his firm, allowing him to do that. You know, so if we're in our 60s, upper 60s, even low 70s, I mean, what are we going to do? I mean, unless you've got some super hobbies of gardening or what have you, you know, or traveling, you know, it's good stuff to do for a short time, but then it's like boredom. And I feel like people age a lot when they're bored and the mind is inactive. So I don't know. I felt like, let me bring visibility in what I've done with a merger and how well that's worked.
So, Salim, one thing about your book, The CPA Firm Exit Playbook, and you do make a point that a lot of mergers don't work out, right? The acquisition, it's hard to get those things done. Actually, sometimes harder than people think if they've not tried to do them. They are very difficult. Why is that? Why is it hard to really pull off an acquisition? Or is it, would you say?
So it's finding the right one. I mean, if there's cultural differences in how the culture of a firm is, and if you've got two firms and they've got such different cultures, then it's going to be, you know, difficult to kind of, you know, work together. I think that's like one of the biggest reasons why they don't work. And not to say that two firms are going to be identical in culture.
Sure.
But we need some level of, you know, some level of alignment. And then communication, Jason, is so critical. You know, just good communication, two-way communication, frequent communication, honest conversations. All this becomes really important. And if we're not, you know, and it's sad how communication is lacking in firms. You know, it's almost seen as it's taking time away from me doing the work.
Right.
And it shouldn't be. It's really part and parcel of running a successful firm, operating a firm is frequent communication, done on time, every time.
Yeah. That's hard. The communication is hard, you know, and a lot of the, we were even working with a client today on, you know, communication between us and feedback related to that. And it's just a really tough thing. It's a tough thing to teach, and it's a tough thing to know how to do well, but it is a skill you learn over time, I would say, you know, learning how to communicate in a way that's clear and provides a lot of comfort and care, you know, to clients you work with. But that makes sense. That's why, you know, firms don't always, you know, work well when they get together. Sometimes we've found in the firm acquisitions that even ones we've tried, the owner sometimes is so intimately tied, you know, to their firm that they struggle to even agree to sell. So we've talked to firm owners where we're like, hey, let's talk about maybe if we could acquire you. And they're like, I'm not sure. And it's like, well, you said your firm's for sale. And there's still, it's like they're feeling their way through it. And then we started pushing on them and going, hey, we're going to get serious. So we're going to move fast. If you're not serious, we really need to know. And can you think about it a little bit more? And sometimes they'll come back and go, I'm not ready. And why do you think that is? They think they are. They pursue somebody to purchase them, and then they back away. Have you experienced that before?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we are attached. I mean, it is our baby after all. Yeah. You know, that's all we've known.
Yeah.
For the most part, right? It's letting go of the baby.
Yeah.
And I think that's the challenge is how do we let go but yet be involved and know and trust that the people taking over it are going to be able to do it well with your support, the seller's support.
Yeah.
So I think if it's come across, you know, if it's brought in as a team effort and really working for the greater good, which is the client, you know, the client's going to benefit from the new relationship, the new structure, as long as the seller is involved.
Yeah.
We've got to keep the seller involved because that's the relationship they have, the knowledge base and all that.
Yeah.
Let's not lose that. Let's bring the seller in as one component now. Mm. But then there's going to be others on the team that are servicing the client. And it's really got to be a team effort then.
Yeah.
Which is communication. In order for a team to work, there's got to be communication.
Yeah.
Open communication. A platform, an online platform, a hub where we can all see the conversations that the team is having. A central place of communication that becomes to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what do you have a seller do when you acquire their firm? Kind of do you have a thought of what is their role? Is it more communication with their client base and handing that relationship over to your firm, or what is their role?
Depends what they enjoy doing. If they enjoy doing the technical work, the reviewing work, like the firm that we acquired, Jeff's firm, he enjoys that. He enjoys reviewing tax returns. So my team is preparing the returns. Jeff is reviewing it. He loves interacting with the clients. Mm. So he's continuing to do that with support. He doesn't have to be involved in the e-filing and all the other stuff that the admin team can do. So he comes in with his knowledge base, his relationship and love for the clients. Mm. He comes in, which in places that he enjoys and where he's effective as well.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. You can design it in whatever way you want it to look, right?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. And I know some sellers, they love business development. They love selling and having those conversations so they can be part of the sales and marketing team and continuing to grow the firm and that, you know?
Yeah. Well, how does it match what you're wanting to do? Because if you're the acquirer, You want to find an owner who wants to do a role maybe that you want to exit out of. Is that right? That are there things you were able to give up that you know you really shouldn't be doing anymore if you could just acquire this other firm?
Role is the role that I would do myself personally?
Yeah, the one you specifically needed to change, you know, as you're getting older.
So the team is handling everything pretty much day to day. I'm myself, I enjoy sales and marketing. So I oversee the sales and marketing department. And then I'm the CEO. So I kind of wear two hats in my firm. Sales and marketing department head, and then the CEO. And currently, I mean, I'm loving those two roles. So I'm playing in those two seats.
I love it. Yeah. Well, in your book, there's a lot of concepts you have in your book. There's a exit evolution path talk about, which is like a five phases that the owner, you know, moves through. Can you walk us through kind of that path, those five phases and path?
Yeah, so it starts with a firm owner that is not sure what the next chapter is going to look like. They've been working in it, kind of some of the sellers that you've conversed with, where they're like, no, I'm not ready for this, right? So it's bringing that clarity, and I've really emphasized how important clarity is, and opening up the options and clarifying and saying, hey, you just don't have to sell, there's other options as well. And it starts with clarity and knowing oneself is, what do I want to do the next 10 years?
Okay.
Once we have that clarity, then the other steps kind of follow. If you're going for like, man, I want to sell, I want to be out of here by 2 years. Okay. No right or wrong.
Right.
It's what's right or wrong, what's right for you. And so then the path becomes, let's do that as the evolution. If somebody says, yeah, I've got 10 years, I'm 64 years old. Yeah. I can easily do 10 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Then it's like, hey, what role do you want to play in the firm? Some businesses, they are physical offices, and they're like, they've heard from you and they're like thinking about virtual and they're not sure. So it's exploring, what does that do for them?
Yeah. Okay.
You know, transitioning to virtual.
Yeah.
What type of growth do they want to do? What type of investment do they want to make in their firm? And so if they've got, you know, more than 2 years, then they can make those investments and get a nice ROI. Investments in their technology, in their workflow, in their operational system, investment in marketing. So it depends kind of, you know, all this stuff. Most people, we're so busy, Jason, in kind of working in the firm, doing the day-to-day, that this type of stuff doesn't just get the attention, or it gets like a passing thought, nothing more than that, or a conversation with a friend or a spouse, but it's just not as much reflection time to see, hey, what's right for me?
Yeah. And I guess that's the point of your book, is really to figure out, you got to really sit down and start to think, what is it that you want? You've got to take time to go through that process. And like you say, running a firm just takes so much work. We don't always take the time to really think, what should my next 8 to 10 years look like? But man, when you hit mid-50s, you start thinking about it. I did. And it's kind of surprising, right? You start to realize that you're getting older and you've done this a long time. So it's wild. I love that you focus on what is right for that person. And I guess your book addresses different growth paths, right? In different ways.
Yeah, it does. And it's also got case studies, different scenarios of practice owners in different stages of their life, and why, when they chose one way, what the outcome was, the consequence was, versus another. So yeah, there's probably about 10 or 12 case studies that I've got in. So I feel like every practitioner can really, they'll find themselves in one or two case studies like, yeah, this is me, man.
Yeah.
You know, and which is great because then I've kind of, you know, laid out the path for them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very cool. One thing you talk about, as you know, we're thinking about our value as the owner, you talk about $10 tasks versus $100 tasks. And, you know, helping firms identify which task I guess they should be focused on and the other ones that they shouldn't be doing. Can you talk about that concept a little bit?
Yeah, it's about, you know, getting paid for the value that we bring. You know, that's what, you know, money is. It's the exchange of value for currency, financial currency, dollars.
Yeah, right.
And the more valuable we are, the more that financial currency is going to be.
Mm.
And if the firm owner is not doing the CEO work, which is what they've got to be doing, then there are going to be negative consequences. There's somebody who's got to do the CEO stuff.
Mm.
Simple as that, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody's got to kind of play that role. And so if the firm's, somebody's not doing that, whether it's the owner or somebody else, like we got to fill that gap. If it's not the owner, it needs to be somebody who can fill that role.
Yeah.
Because it's just how things are. I mean, you know, for a healthy body, we need to eat good food. We need to have good exercise. It's just part of running a business. You need a CEO, and you know, there's stuff that the CEO needs to do. And one of that is, I mean, you know, the vision, you know, it's being strategic, it's being forward looking.
Mm.
Where do I want the firm to be a year from, you know, within, you know, we start, I mean, you know, we went through this, you know, every year we go through this, but it's really revisiting our 10-year plan and then three-year vision and then 1 year and then, okay, next, I like to plan in trimesters. So January through April 30, we have our rocks.
Yep.
And, you know, in each of these departments, and then they're shared in a kickoff meeting, which takes place in a couple of days since it's the beginning of the year. So, you know, kind of letting the entire team know these are the rocks that we're going to have for 2026, but really focusing in on the first trimester because things will change. We just kind of have a loose idea of what's going to happen in the second and third trimester, but just honing in on the first trimester, we need everybody to kind of work that. And then the team, each department's meeting weekly to go over the rocks, their goals and that. But that's all like driven from the CEO, you know, the need, recognizing how important that is. You won't have a team member saying this for the most part. It's got to be the CEO that's going to drive it. The CEO doesn't have to be the one who runs the meeting or creates the rocks, but they've got to be the vision. They've got to bring their idea of how important that is.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so key and something we run into in consulting. A lot of times firms that are struggling, you know, if we're consulting with a firm in the $5 to $8 million range and still at that size, you can find a firm owner, the founder, that's still pretty heavily in technical service. And sometimes that's the first thing we've got to do is really address the team structure. They need a leadership team and they've got to get client relationships and revenue generation off of their plate. And it's so hard for them to make that move. You got to push them through that process. Sometimes it takes them a year to carve out room to be a strategic thinker. And then they got to learn how to do it. And it's so interesting you're saying that. That's some of the first stuff we run into when we're consulting with firms is that the owner's reviewing tons of tax returns, like a lot, or they're still the main technical person in the firm, and they just haven't built other leaders around them. And how did you know to move out of that? Like that, was that just innate to you to know that you had to move into a CEO role?
Yeah, actually in another podcast, I was sharing that nothing that I've done has been original. Everything has been learned.
Me
nothing
either,
has been innate. I've just I've just kind of, I think one of the qualities that I've had that's worked in my favor is not to question things too much, not to fight it, just to take it. If somebody tells me I do this, for the most part, if they've done it, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And so, I don't know, when I started my firm when I was 32 years old, I was just having such a hard time in those first 5-6 years of running a firm. And I'm like, man, there's got to be a better way. And I started reading books and, you know, listening to stuff.
Yeah.
And I was getting all these ideas. One of my first mentors was Michael Gerber, the E-Myth. And
oh, wow,
stuff
yeah.
I learned from talking to him about how to, you know, the working on it, the working in it, the technician, the manager, I have no clue. Even though I was a CFO, like I'd come from public accounting, but I had no clue of all this stuff. They don't really teach you in grad school what have you. You know, now I'm, you know, starting my own practice, I'm like, man, this is too far more difficult than I thought it would be. I thought I'd just get to 7 figures, easy peasy. And, you know, now I'm struggling with, you know, just kind of making it. So it was, you know, insights and all that stuff that came from people that had, you know, been in this path before me.
Yeah.
I just took it and ambitiously and started putting it into work in my firm. And it wasn't easy. It's, you know, it's been a process. I have made so many mistakes, more than I can count, but a few successes along the way. And the successes are far more than the failures that they carry a business through forward.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Well, that's true. That's how we learn. We learn it from other people. We are often always stealing ideas from others. I know that's how I've done it. Well, as we wrap up, Salim, I'm curious for you to kind of peer into the future for our profession, you know, with AI and technology and those things are wild, you know, the things we're going through. You know, I'm reading a book on AI and it's really calling it like an industrial revolution. It's kind of what AI is bringing to us. What do you think about all that and how it will impact our future and our growth and our team?
It's wild. Like you use the word wild, it is wild. It's
wild.
West. It's far
it's
more
wild.
Than the Wild West.
Yes,
who knows?
It is.
Who knows where it's going to go? But what I do know is I think it's going to get worse for folks that are in the commodity business. If you're reviewing tax returns and doing accounting or anything remotely close to that, you're in for a rude awakening. You know, we've seen it come. It's not like it hasn't come. It's last 15 years. We've been seeing it, like QuickBooks and TurboTax, and we saw different stages of it. But now, AI is at a times 1,000. It's 1,000x what we have seen. In the amount of how that's going to change stuff, at the pace it's going to change stuff. So if we are the highest, the partner, the managing partner, and we're doing this technical stuff, and that's going to be really, really difficult. To make ends meet with continuing to do that. And I think now's the opportunity. It's never late.
Right.
To retool, to skill up, to change the mindset and all that. It can be done in 6 months, a year. We don't need years and years. It's just recognizing and then doing something about it.
Yeah. Yeah, or just taking the first step, you know, that none of us truly know how to fully leverage it. But we're being forced to, right? There's no choices we have. And not only is it going to hurt those in the commodity business, but AI is also a super tool. It's an amazing tool to help us, to really help us do some of our best work now. But we have to deploy it into our team and use it and, you know, teach our team how to use it too, which we're in the process of now, really getting everybody just used to having this thinking partner, you know, with them all the time and learning how to lean on it. It's just, it's a wild practice.
And it's a great asset for the CEO.
Yeah.
It's been a technician entrenched in that, like not much, you know, time and energy to do the forward looking stuff. Now you've got the tools that can have this nice conversation with you. And Jason, one of the things that I'll also share as we are concluding here is being part of a mastermind, a support group is incredibly important. We don't have to do this alone. And I know you run an organization and you've got like-minded people that support each other, and that's what we need. Why do it any other way? You know, get the support. I think that's something that I've always been a believer of and always been part of myself, trying to be part of a group that's going to elevate me in my thinking and that.
Yeah. Well, you and I have both done it alone too. And that doesn't work well, you know, as you're growing. So I don't know, some people may just have to get to a point where they're like, all right, I'm beyond my own capabilities. So getting into a mastermind group is just so key, to hear, you know, how other people are running a firm or thinking about the future or using these tools. So it's incredible. Well, Salim, this is awesome to have you on the show. Just, you have so much wisdom. Man, you've been doing this for so long. And there's
time's in my favor.
That's right. Well, that's how it works, right? You do something for 30 years and you go, wow, I messed up so many things. I think I can help people now. So it's really cool. Is there a place people can go online maybe to find your books and things you write?
Yeah, I mean, Amazon, the CPA Exit Playbook's there, or do a search my name. I've got a three-part duo for the books. This was my third and last one.
Yeah.
My firm for CPA firm owners is called Straight Talk Transitions. My own firm is called Straight Talk CPA, so if anybody wants to check that out, please do. But yeah, Straight Talk CPAs is my accounting firm. Straight Talk Transitions is the work I do with folks looking at the next chapter.
Nice.
And then Amazon.
Awesome. I love it. Okay. Salim Omar, thank you so much for hanging out with us on the Thrivecast. It's good to see
you
again. Yeah. And good to have your wisdom on the show. Appreciate you.
Thanks, man. You take care.
Thanks.